Welcome to Discover Film, the podcast where we talk to filmmakers from the festival circuit. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we talk to Steve Desmond. You can watch Steve's award-winning short film, Monsters, right now at discoverfilm.net. There's going to be spoilers in this conversation, so you've been warned. All right, let's talk to Steve. We've got Steve Desmond here, who wrote, co-wrote and directed Monsters, right?
Yes, directed and co-wrote.
Yeah, but before we talk about it, I was going to ask you, because we covered this a little at the festival last year, what's your history? What transitioned you to get into filmmaking?
Sure. Well, I grew up in the Chicago area, and as a little kid, I had this babysitter when I was like 5 years old, and just to keep me entertained, I was like playing with my dinosaur figures, and she brought out like this old school 1980s style video camera, and we made a little movie of me with like my T-Rex and Triceratops figures. And I was so just fascinated and enraptured with the fact that I could make a movie. And I literally thought at age five that this little movie we were making was going to play in theaters. And when my mom came home later that day, I was making a poster because I thought it would play in theaters and people had to know what my movie was about. And I think just even at that young age, just knowing that anyone could actually make a film and just feeling that power just got me hooked and I dressed up as a filmmaker for my second grade career fair. I looked up, you know, what a director looked like in an encyclopedia because there wasn't an internet yet. And it was a picture of like, I think Cecil B. DeMille from the 1930s or 40s. So I came to school with like a brown fedora and a brown suit. And everyone thought I wanted to be Indiana Jones when I grew up. And then when I, you know, later into my teens, I found out film school was a thing and you could legitimately pursue this. And I applied to different film schools, ended up going to USC, here in Los Angeles. And ever since then, just been working my way up as a director and writer.
Right. So your whole education, you were gearing towards it.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I will say I don't think I took it really seriously until I was probably 17 when you actually start thinking about like college and career and you realize it's actually a thing. But yeah, pretty much I used to go to like film camps and summers in high school, which is a super nerdy thing to say. I remember telling my football coach that I couldn't play football next year because I had to go to film camp with all the other cool kids. So he was surprised to hear that, but it's what I've always loved to do.
You know, that's actually a cool story because how many guys actually know that early that, you know what, I'm going to give up the thing that gets girls in high school for the thing that gets girls, you know, later on in life.
Yeah. That was my strategic decision at 17.
So that's cool. And I guess at the film camp, obviously, so you were around people who could mentor you and people who could gear you towards film school. Because I know a lot of people kind of during undergrad, that's when they realize, oh, I should think about film programs or graduate school.
Yeah, and I actually think that's a great approach, what you just said, because the nice thing about that is that someone studied something else in undergrad and kind of has a different, you know, wealth of knowledge to draw from before they go into filmmaking. So I think either approach works. But just for me at 17, 18, I was just so focused on this and just knowing that you could spend 4 years learning filmmaking was just so tantalizing that I couldn't imagine doing something else.
Yeah, and you chose USC, so I assume that was like an engineering guy getting into MIT.
Sure. It was the dream school for me, and I did not get into my second, third, or fourth choices, but I was able to get into USC, and it was just it was an awesome experience.
Oh, that's great. And that got you out to LA, so actually created, you probably ended up with contacts and friends and just part of a community of people who are aspiring to be filmmakers.
You do. The tricky thing with that is you do come out with a community, but you come out with a community and you're all like 22, you know, so everyone is like,
no, I'm not saying they had connections, but if you had a short to do at 23, you could get a bunch of, you wouldn't have to search for people to volunteer.
And the cool thing is now that I've been out for a number of years, you notice that a lot of people leave the film industry fairly quickly. Even USC alumni, like within 1 to 3 years, there's a considerable drop off. And even if they don't leave the industry, a lot of people understandably so might switch what their initial goal was. So as we all get a little bit older, I feel the community comes into play more because the people who are still doing it are starting to like really climb and claw up the ranks, and we're able to help each other more in a career sense.
Yeah, more. Absolutely. And I bet a lot of those people who decided, you know what, production is too cutthroat for me or too something for them, they might end up working in offices, and they're not bad to know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happened right after film school? Did you start producing stuff right away? Did you do the job?
Right after film school, I think for myself and for a lot of other people, you get hit with a cold, hard reality check of how hard the business actually is. My first job, I was an assistant to a literary manager making $400 a day, $400 a week, sorry, $400 a week.
Yeah, 80 bucks a day.
Yeah, for about 60 hours of work a week. And it was horrible. It was soul crushing. But I think it's important in that it makes you – film school is a blast. All that you're doing is making short films and writing scripts. When you get into the industry, you get questioned you know, constantly, like, almost like implied questions of, do you really want to do this? Do you want to work 60 hours a week for $400 while you have friends going into much more lucrative careers? And if the answer is yes, you kind of just toll through it. And so – my first several years was working different. I worked as an assistant to different people. Then I got into being an editor and an assistant editor, and always just jobs to pay the bills while I was writing screenplays on the side until I was able to secure representation and start writing full time.
Right. So you secured representation as a writer first?
Yes. Yeah.
And you did that just based on writing samples, or was that based on getting some stuff out there?
It was based entirely on spec screenplays.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of it is just getting your material out to as many people as possible. And in that, you know, I made it a point that I would rather get rejected by someone than have someone not read it at all. You know, and so I was just for years, I would just be peddling, I say our material because I have a writing partner, but peddling our material to pretty much anyone who would read it. And eventually, you know, some managers took notice, and then we were able to rise up a little higher through representation ranks. But just, you know, a lot of it's just attrition.
Yeah. And did you get very good at writing query letters and a synopsis and a log line?
I did, but I found phone calls to be far more effective than query letters. I think query letters are too easy to dismiss while I'm thinking back like years at this point.
Yeah, that was back before email too, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, email was definitely a regular thing. Yeah. I mean, not that old, Jeff, but
I am. That, you know, when I think of query letters, I think of envelopes.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've never actually done that. I would... Years ago, when I did not have representation, I would call people's assistants and try to befriend the assistants who are also trying to become managers or agents or executives, and try to get them to take a chance on reading my material so that if they liked it, it would benefit them too, because they would be the one recommending it to their boss. So they would look good. I would look good. And that would be my approach. And if you sent it to 20 places, maybe only 3 or 4 would actually read it, but if one of those liked it, that's all you need.
Yeah, and it sounds like you and your writing partner followed the best advice in the world for writers, which is you kept writing. You didn't just write one script and try to perfect it. I mean, did you build up a nice library of work?
We did, though what you said in terms of writing one script and perfecting it, we definitely fell into that, I'd say, for the first year or two after college, just because in some ways, you kind of don't know any better at that age. You know, you're trying to just write the best script possible, even though you're probably not in a place to do it. But since then, yeah, I think having multiple scripts, and also just to make the time for it. Like, even if I was working full time, I would still be writing 5 days a week.
Right, like when you came home or during lunch, or you just was like, hey, I'm not answering work email. I just had a good idea.
Yeah, it would usually be full, like back then it would be full days on the weekends. And then you know, maybe three of the five, you know, week that maybe one Monday through Wednesday or Tuesday through Thursday, just for, I don't know, an hour or two at night. So they wouldn't be full days, but really using the weekends to kind of compensate for that.
I think that's called a kick-ass work ethic.
Yeah, try to. I mean, I would try to do jobs that would have little take-home responsibility, where I didn't have to read scripts over the weekends, or I didn't have to do overtime often. Like I would sacrifice having a lesser job, still industry job, but a lesser job if it gave me more time to pursue my projects when it wasn't working.
Right, right. Okay, so after you get that manager and some representation, how long did it take you to get something to screen, like even you know, a short? I'm assuming Monsters is such a great short. I'm assuming it's not your first.
It's not my first, but it is my first in a while. Like, I was really pursuing the writing route for a long time, and, you know, I had some student films and some work I did right after college that, you know, on the directing front, but frankly, I was so broke after college that writing was the cheap alternative to filmmaking. So I'll put it this way. It took me, since my first real representation, it took about 5 years before I got paid to write.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that time, producing your own short or something just wasn't on the list because you're not a trust fund baby.
I'm not a trust fund baby. And also, like, I was never, for better or worse, I just, with shorts, I was never someone who would just like kind of go out on a weekend with a couple hundred dollars and make one. Not that there's anything wrong with that, and some people have found tremendous success with that. I just, typically the ideas I have tend to cost a little bit more. So just having the money to make it, you know, I want to be able to do it right.
Yeah, and I'm assuming just about all your scripts were feature.
Some TV, yeah.
Oh, some TV, yeah, but feature. Yeah. But you were writing long format.
Yeah, I was. I don't think I wrote a short film for years, just because I was trying to make money as a screenwriter.
Right. Well, then I assume you didn't stop doing that. But when did you add in the idea of writing a short and directing it?
Well, with Monsters, what happened was, you know, I had started to break in as a writer, but as a screenwriter, it does get admittedly frustrating or just tiresome because you're constantly waiting for someone to make a decision about your script. And I just was getting very antsy and wanting to make something. And with Monsters, I had written, along with my writing partner, a series of kind of Twilight Zone-y style vignettes that were intended to all tie together into either an anthology feature or a web series. And Monsters was one of those episodes, and it was our personal favorite of the group. And we just decided to, you know, and the project had been optioned by three different companies, but never made.
And right, of the full anthology,
yeah, which is called Twisted Avenue. And the project was optioned three times, but never made. And we kind of just got tired of waiting. And we're like, you know, we can't afford to make all of this, but we could afford to, with a Kickstarter, make one of them. And Monsters was our favorite of the eight or so stories we'd written. So we decided to, you know, I put in as much money as I personally could from screenwriting fees I had saved up. And then we did a Kickstarter to make up the bulk of the budget and went out and made the film.
Wow, Steve, I got to say, it's extra impressive to me because I didn't even know about the anthology thing until now. And you were part of this zeitgeist that led to Black Mirror and whatnot. Like this, you were right on the cusp of what's really big today.
Yeah, no, and I'd still, we actually have, we're, you know, now the Monsters is done and it's had most of its festival run. We're trying to get the feature anthology made. We actually have a private investor interest in, you know, already putting up half the money, and we're seeking funds to make up the other half of the budget, and hopefully get that made at the end of the year or sometime early next year.
I got to tell you, I mean, Monsters, I'll start praising it a little more later on, but the quality of writing in Monsters is so high, and then you did such a good job directing, and the production of it is such high quality that if Twisted Avenue, if Monsters is an example of what Twisted Avenue is going to be, I think it's going to make it.
I hope so, man. I mean, it's definitely an example of it. All of the Twisted Avenue storylines, you know, like monsters, start in these, you know, very empathetic situations with, you know, relatable characters like the Jen character and monsters, and then just go to some dark and twisted places that all have like some kind of social commentary built in and have some kind of twist ending to them. And they all intertwine together. It's not a pure anthology where it's just story one, story two, story three. It's almost like a loose ensemble where, you know, like almost like a Pulp Fiction structure where the characters will show up in different storylines that they're not the leads in.
Well, cool. And I have to say, that's one of the things I'm sure you hear a lot about monsters is the double twist ending.
Sure.
The multiple twists. Yeah. If you keep that up, that's it's rock solid.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Here's something I want to share with you is that at times, you know, I have friends who can't make it to the film festivals. You know, I'll show them monsters, and there have been large debates about monsters.
Oh, wow.
You've got enough material in there that besides the fact that what the monsters are changes throughout the film. At the end, we've even gone so deep as to say, at the end, one of my friends said, you know what, the parents actually are the monsters because they're breaking the population rule. And clearly, the population law isn't flippant. Clearly, like, Earth is in bad shape in this world. And these people who had a kid were being unbelievably unethical and selfish, having a kid just to lock her in the basement. Like, they should have not had that kid. It was pretty impressive that you were able to inspire deep political debate.
That's awesome. That's really cool there. Actually the first time I've heard that one specifically, but that's cool.
You know, he's a political guy. All right, so since Monsters, you had a really good festival run with it?
Yeah, it just got accepted into its 91st film festival, and it's won close to 40 awards as a Vimeo staff pick. So yeah, it's been very cool, and just has helped me get more into the the goal for it in a entertainment sense was just to have something to show to people instead of that wasn't a screenplay, and in the career sense was just to put me in a position that I could pitch to direct the material I'm writing.
Yeah, well, 91 festivals, so well over 1,000 people, I bet, have seen it that way.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, online, the count is, between Vimeo and YouTube, close to 150,000.
Wow, that's excellent. So word is spreading. People are actually saying you should watch this.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that after the election last year, we've actually gotten over half of our view count. Just in terms of different takeaways to the film, there's also kind of like an illegal immigration allegory that some people pick up on, which isn't something. I mean, we made the film long before the election of last year, but, you know, since then it was covered on IO9. It became a Vimeo staff pick and suddenly got like a lot of like renewed attention after that, which has been interesting.
Wow, that's an interesting angle.
And unintentional, to be completely honest. It's not something we sought out to do or we were not trying to make an overtly political film. But if people want to interpret it that way and take something more from it, that's totally cool.
It's funny because my political take home from it when I originally saw it, and even today rewatching it, is a bit of a commentary on China and, you know, the one child policy.
Sure, sure. Of course.
That's the obvious one.
Yeah.
It's funny that they're letting our new administration inspire them to comment.
Yeah.
Are there more shorts you want to do, or you're really just focused on the series and you're still writing features?
Yeah. I mean, it's there's definitely more shorts I want to do. The next one I do will probably be a more direct proof of concept for a feature script that we're working on right now. But aside from that, we have, you know, several other projects in the works. We have a TV pilot we got that we wrote for a company called I Am Global. On the film side, they did Hacksaw Ridge and Silence last year. We have a TV project with a company called Awesomeness TV that I'm attached to direct, and had a script on The Blacklist last year, and just trying to get either that next short feature or TV series off the ground.
Right, but So now you're thinking about a short where you pull, you know, 10 great pages out of a feature you've written and and do a proof of concept like that?
More along those lines, yeah, just as more of a kind of a direct jumping off point for a film.
Yeah, you sound like a pretty practical guy. You did a great job directing Monsters, but are you determined to direct one of the scripts you've co-written, or are you still open to just selling those suckers and letting other people direct them?
I'm practical, but I'm also very passionate. So yeah, most of them I would like to direct, but we also, like, the I Am Global project was an open writing assignment, and it's a huge budget project I'm just not at the experience level to be in consideration for. So I'm certainly have no expectations to direct that. It's more just getting the best filmmaker you can. We have another feature script making the rounds right now that's also a bigger project. So to me, if it's a project that could be made for a modest budget, I definitely passionately put my name in the hat. But if it's a bigger project or if it's a for hire project, then, you know, I'm just trying to partner with a good filmmaker.
Yeah. Have you had the experience where someone interested in one of those scripts has there been a meeting where you're like, you know, if you watch my short, you'll see I'll direct this and my director's fee will be really kind.
Yes. I've had several of those meetings. And yeah, it's really comes down to a budget thing, to be honest. Like if it's a feature script that could be made for, you know, sub $5 million, I think it's a very open conversation. If it's more than that, it gets understandably difficult.
Actually, out of curiosity, are people in these meetings, do you get to wow them with the 150,000 view thing? Because I would imagine in this day and age, Hollywood execs are so impressed now with the internet, you know, and followers. I would imagine when they hear the number of views, they go, oh, wait, this is for real.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely helps. I mean, it's not like a million views, but at the same time, it's a 13-minute horror film. You know, it's a 2-minute comedy, which I think, you know, tend to go viral a lot more often.
Yeah, well, someone getting kicked in the crotch, that's what...
Yeah. That'll get 10 million views,
yeah, right? Yeah, that's the 10 million. No one falls on a fence on you.
It definitely helps. The Vimeo staff pick carries with it a definite level of respect out here, which helps a lot. It's more just in that case kind of serves as a directing sample to go along with whatever the pitch is for the particular project.
Yeah. And actually, I didn't ask, but when you guys were throwing out these ideas, I assume you and your partner just spitball a lot. Did the idea for Monsters, where did the original idea for it come from? Or were you just working along the lines of this Twisted Avenue idea and just coming up with as many things you could have on that street?
It's kind of the latter of what you said. It's like we had several scripts written already. And at the time, we had a production company that wanted to option it, and they wanted more scripts. So Michael, my writing partner, and I went back and were just brainstorming. And in the midst of brainstorming a bunch of ideas, the idea of a kid that's kept in a basement or a bunker and you think it's for one thing, but it's for another, was kind of the kernel of it. And then, you know, that led to... Are we giving away spoilers? I guess we're already giving away spoilers.
So yeah, we can spoil the heck out of it, because there's also going to be a preamble. I'll record a preamble before this, where I say, if you really want the film festival experience, watch it online, then listen to the interview.
So the original idea was just it was a little boy initially, but we changed it to a little girl kept in a bunker, and you think it's like the apocalypse and there are monsters outside, and she goes upstairs and it's normal and her parents are just like, it's some crazy abduction scenario. And that was the initial idea. And it just kind of occurred to us that, like, we thought it was solid, but we didn't think it kind of went far enough. And we also acknowledged that some people might see that coming. So it kind of just led to the next thought of like, okay, what if you think it's that, but it's really something else? What if it's a one child population controlled world? And in that case, acknowledging that there were two twists, we were okay with the fact if some people saw the first twist coming, because we were pretty confident that very few would see the second one coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have the strength there of there's been so much in the news about these horrible abductions and people trapped in basements.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
It's messed up, man. I've got a feature script that goes into that world in more detail, completely separate from Monsters. It's just a very real world psychological thriller. And having to research that subject matter, like, it is, there's some scary, you know, humans are scary. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. That's the kind of research that I guess it gives you more productivity because you can't sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to ask you about the Vimeo staff pick. Was that just a wonderfully pleasant surprise, or is it something you applied for and they took a look?
It's a wonderfully pleasant surprise, and you, as far as I know, you cannot apply for it, and you either just you get it or you don't, and you don't know when it's coming either. Like, I've had friends who've gotten a staff pick in within a week after they put their film on Vimeo, and myself, Monsters was up there for a number of months before we got a staff pick, and it just kind of, you know, one day I got up and I opened my email and I had a whole bunch of emails in there because it just the amount of views you get just significantly increases. And
right. And for every time someone views it and comments, all their friends see that.
And it was just a very, just a wonderful, pleasant surprise, as you said.
That's great. That's great. Cool. All right. Well, I guess it's time for the four questions then, because we've exhausted Monsters, haven't we?
All right, sounds good, yeah.
I'd like to keep telling you how great it is, but...
Yes, go on.
All right, that was Steve Desmond, a great guy and a great filmmaker. Again, you can watch Monsters right now at discoverfilm.net. You can also learn about the film festival where I met Steve at filminvasionla.com. And if you want to learn more about me, you can check out jeffhoward.me. Also, I have to remember to mention that the Sherman Oaks Film Festival is going to be in Sherman Oaks, of course, and that's going to be November 17th, 18th, and 19th. All right. See you next time.